You're listening to Your Music, Your Business, a podcast helping you to explore the business behind your music. Hello all, and welcome back to Your Music, Your Business, a podcast helping musicians and industry professionals understand the music business. Today, I'm joined by Mick, the country manager for Australia and New Zealand at Believe. Welcome, Mick. Thank you so much for joining the podcast.
Cheers. It's good to be here and provide some information. Thanks for having me on.
No worries. Well, firstly, I can almost guess that there are some people listening who aren't across what Believe do. So could you give it a bit of a breakdown for us?
Yeah, for sure. Quite simply, I mean, Believe's a global music company providing digital services to artists and labels around the world. So we've got 50 offices around the world. There's 1,500 people that work for the Believe Group. To tie it in a nutshell, we kind of just offer various levels of services. So, you know, a key one, obviously, being a distributor or a digital music company is providing distribution services. So we distribute to 150 plus stores around the world. We have label management services, artist relations services that allow artists and labels to work with someone that is an expert in the field of releasing music and strategizing with them. We also have a dedicated DSP pitching team that is there to support a label manager or artist relations manager to make sure that artists and labels are developing their audience on platforms. We have a dedicated video team to help out with monetization and optimization of video assets, alongside a support team that is there if we need to update metadata and cover art alongside it. So, and then we have some secondary sort of services that include neighboring rights and sync, some physical distribution at times. And we also have an artist services division, which is that additional layer on top of distribution that we have dedicated project manager, marketing managers, digital marketing services alongside it. The key thing for Believe is, I mean, we're here to serve artists and labels with care, fairness, transparency, expertise, and innovation. And some of the brands that sit alongside or within the group or within the family, as we say, are TuneCore, the aggregator. So TuneCore was acquired by Believe in 2015. Nuclear Blast, which is, you know, one of the most prominent metal labels, alongside of a number of French labels as well. And locally, I manage a team of five across Melbourne and Sydney that consist of label managers, DSP pitching managers, and project managers as well on the other services side.
Wow, what a mouthful for you.
It was a bit of a mouthful. I mean, when you start, you can't stop.
Definitely a lot of different services trying to cater to all the different elements of musicians. It sounds like as the country manager, you must have your hands full a lot of weeks.
Yes, from time to time. Fridays are always the special day in the distribution field when products are released and making sure everything goes to plan. But I've got a really solid team that understand the level of service we need to provide and how important our role is in getting music out every week.
Yeah, great. Well, can you give me a bit of a background as to how you got into distribution or into the music industry, I suppose, as well?
Yeah, well, I come from a musician background. So I was playing music, into my teens, into being an adult. So I was all about obviously playing guitar and songwriting and being in bands. So it kind of came from that. As I went down the line towards the last band, I just became a lot more interested in how to make that environment work. I was booking rehearsals, booking shows, booking tours, booking a recording, managing the finances, and trying to get the best opportunities for us as an act. So I became really interested in the business side just as much as the performing side. So from there, I kind of I was at uni studying engineering, and I kind of knew I wasn't going to do that. And luckily, a course at Vic Uni came up called Bachelor of Business in Music Industry, and I got kind of convinced to join the course, and finished it really quickly, and then from there tried to get some work experience, which then led to my first role. So my first role was in music publishing, delving more in the production music side of things, but then got my first role in distribution at Shock. Within a couple of years, I was running that music department, and then found myself at Believe and yeah, have been here for the past, is it 5.5 years now? I think 5.5.
Wow.
So started up the Australia New Zealand business unit, and yeah, continue to run it from then.
Wow. Sounds like such an interesting journey. And I love the fact that you've done a bachelor in business management in the music industry, because I've done the same, although they call it entertainment management where I did it. Okay. And it's I find it really interesting talking to others who've gone through a similar bachelor, because it's just a different world going through the education system, knowing about the music industry for sure.
It gave me a big leg up, you know, when you've booked shows or you've done events before, or you understand what a record label does versus a publishing company does. When you're in those courses, you do have a bit of background to you, and it helps, you know, because there was a lot of people in those courses that were probably really interested in music, but then didn't understand what all these people that are in the music industry do. And when you've got firsthand experience, you kind of have a bit of a leg up. But yeah, it's nice to have the experience, and anyone can do it, really, when you think about it. You know, anyone can kind of help out and act or get their hands dirty if they're interested in knowing what the industry's like.
Yeah, definitely. It's I personally have found that it's given me the confidence to have more to be more comfortable in conversations with other people in the music industry, because I have a scratch basis level, like scratch knowledge of what their role is and what they're able to do.
Yeah, it's because it's a bit of a minefield when you think about it. You know, I think once we're in the music industry, we just presume, we think we know what everyone does. And even just, I mean, if you speak to friends that are in music and you talk about the distribution sector, you know, I've got to play it very differently, you know, and explain it in a way that kind of, okay. Whereas if you just presume that, yeah, there's distributors, there's labels, there's this, there's independents, there's majors, it's quite confusing if you don't know how to go about it.
Yeah, I definitely get from people when I tell them that I'm an artist manager this blank look, and I go, yeah. I build the careers of musicians, and they're like,
wow, that's the next one.
Yeah. It's like it actually took me a really long time to find that right sentence. I had to tweak it here and there to try and find it. I'm sure yours dumbs down to, I help people put music up on Spotify.
That's pretty much, you know, when you're going to go, how much information do you think this person knows? You know Spotify? Yes. Well, we put the music up there, and then we hopefully get it in the right spot so people listen to it more. Ah, okay. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like I just simplified my whole job.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot more going on, but we'll just keep it to that.
Yeah, exactly. But for the sake of this person who I'm only going to talk to for 20 minutes, that's the answer.
That's it. Yeah, exactly. We're not going any further because I'm going to complicate it too much.
Yeah, exactly. Gotta love it. Well, yeah, I think, like, in transparency to our listeners as well, I've worked with Believe before with one of my clients. And I think one of my personal favorites of Believe is that it is a personalized distribution, so you do have your own agent. And I wanted to ask you what you felt like the benefit was of having a personalized agent versus a subscription model.
Yeah, I mean, there's benefits on both sides. I mean, as I mentioned before, I mean, TuneCore is part of the Believe group, and that's a subscription model, if you want to call it. It varies. I think it really depends on what an artist or a label needs. And if they need, what I think is the biggest benefit is that team. So when you're working with a personalized distro agent, you end up getting a team alongside that, a team of either a label manager or an artist relations manager that you can work hand in hand to ensure that your release strategy is up to scratch, and that it makes sense, and that it's in line with what DSPs want. Therefore, we can then engage the DSP pitching managers to make sure that everything's pitched in the correct manner. So to me, it's more the team. I think you get a team that cares, and because people like Believe, we choose who we work with. It's not open to every single person. We're choosing people that we think has a great strategy, or the music that we like, the manager, it could be a label that we're really, really interested in. So the benefits are there, that there's a mutual relationship, I think. And therefore that leads to greater support. When there needs to be things to be fixed, or we want to release a single here or do this or pre-orders or what do we think, you've got someone to lean on that has done this many, many times before and understands the benefits and the negatives of maybe how you want to do things.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it is definitely worth noting that it is a selection process. Like, it is music that you guys love and that you want to back. And I think from my experience, it was really helpful to have that end of the line after the release has come out and we've seen the support from, you know, both ends and seen everything sort of work from a manager's perspective of like everything's worked for the release, and then getting your feedback on, you know, what is the actual growth percentage wise and things like that. It was a real eye opener as to what that sort of personalized distribution could offer. And that's not to say that subscription can't offer that as well, because there are ways that you can figure it out. It's just so much nicer when you can email someone and go, oh, what's the answer? And there it is.
Yeah, of course. And both usually have, you know, backends or what we call it, or portals that you can log into to see your data. But I've always said there's looking at data, and then there's discussing data with someone that actually understands what that data means. Exactly. So that's probably the difference as well. You've got a team that understands that data, that understand what the metrics are, that what Spotify want versus YouTube, and how do we work towards that goal that ensures that you get a better result. But the other thing that you said, the key thing for us is it's not once a release is out, it's done. You know, for us, this sort of hard work begins once it's out. You know, how do we prolong playlisting, and how do we completely update the DSPs from week on to week on? Because there's so much happening up post the release. Most of the time, there's touring, or there's radio play, there's a lot of things that we can continually update the DSPs.
Definitely. And I think before we move any further too, I want to make sure that our listeners know what DSP means, because you're definitely referring to what's your translation? Because I know, but I don't want to say that.
Oh, yeah, go for it. I'll let you do it.
You want me to do it, Devin?
Yeah, go.
I know it's the three acronym, like the three letters stand for something specific, but I had my translation as the playlists that are run by editorials. Is that correct?
No, DSPs mean digital services providers. So a DSP would be Spotify, or I should technically say a store.
Yes.
But yeah, we short form, we call all the stores DSPs. So Spotify, yep. Apple, Deezer, YouTube, Amazon. So yep. they're DSPs. Sorry.
See, aren't you glad that we clarified that? Because even I was like, what?
Yeah, again, harping back onto you, explaining onto, you know, what distribution is, or what the music industry is, we do have a lot of these acronyms that which we don't really, we just start using them and then we just run with them. So
exactly, yes. And I think it's very easy to get your brain mixed up in it all, because editorial playlisting was something that when I really started working with artists, it was like, oh, hang on, what's this? And that's like the playlisting that Spotify and iTunes will do specifically, and that's the playlist that artists seem to want to get on at the moment. But then there is playlisting that you know, local homegrown people will do, that say like a Triple J playlist that you get on can be hugely beneficial to someone's career as well, and the plays that you get. So it's definitely DSPs and editorial playlisting are two words that we definitely need to know for this conversation.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think that really leads me to my next big question, that's about playlisting. What are platforms like Spotify, Apple Music and Amazon looking for currently, do you feel, for playlisting?
Yeah, I don't think it's changed all that much, you know, over the years. I mean, just the way I try to explain it to young artists or young managers is that try putting yourself in the Spotify, Apple Music or Amazon's position. I think there's always this rhetoric that, you know, these services were built for the musician and, you know, long in careers. Yes, to some extent. In another extent, they're a consumer-based business. They need consumers to be on the platform, listen to music, otherwise they don't have a business. So I always try and say, make sure you put yourself in their shoes. What are they picking for front left versus local noise? Where do you sit according to where they are picking music? Because sometimes I think there's just that I want to be here and I want to be on this playlist, I want to be on the front cover, I want to be a playlist cover, and not understanding that your music doesn't even suit that playlist. Just because you like it doesn't mean your brand or your music sits there. So I think having a great understanding of those platforms is key. But the next step, and it always has been this, is what is the strategy behind what you're trying to do to get those playlists? So that's where working hand in hand goes well. what is the strategy to develop your audience? What is the strategy to lift follower counts on Spotify? You need to showcase what you're trying to do outside of the platforms before the platforms jump in. And that's not always the case. We've seen a lot of artists where it's their first single and they've had a lot of support from a Spotify or an Apple or an Amazon. That's always going to be the case from time to time. But majority of the case, there's been an artist that's grown their follow count, that's grown their monthly listeners, therefore has grown their socials, they've grown their pool and their audience organically, which has then led to a Spotify, Apple, and Amazon jumping on board, playlisting it a little bit more, growing that audience together, alongside the consumer then liking that music, you know, like skip rates being very low, and then moving from one playlist to the other. So it's still strategy and it's still data. You know, they're really, from a store perspective, they're looking at data and they're making sure that the songs that they're choosing in a certain playlist work for that consumer. And if it doesn't work, they will remove it as quickly as they put it in. Yep. So it's very much having an understanding. So I tried to paint that picture of think from their end. Why are they putting a song in a playlist and why they're removing it? And if you want to be here, then what do you need to do to get there?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that leads to a really great question of where do you feel like artists should be investing in building their audiences at the moment? Because as you said, it's about the big picture and you know, distribution is one very small side. We do, like, for artists that are very motivated by streams and that they really feel like their success of their song is closely linked to streams, Spotify and, like, editorial playlisting is so important to them. But for the big picture, where do you feel audiences can be built through with musicians at the moment?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, look, it's always going to be at the storefront, because they're putting songs in playlists. So therefore, if you get in your playlist, you can grow your audience fairly quickly. But for me, it's still at the rest of the digital platforms. You know, the great thing about where we're at the minute is that everyone has the opportunity to create Facebook, Instagram, Spotify, and Apple, YouTube channel, grow that organically without very much help outside of content. So I think you have to look at the entire picture, where your strengths are. If you're a video person, maybe concentrate on video platforms. If you're more audio or you're more artistic and you don't want your face on it, then you have to think about what you want to try and achieve. Releasing music consistently is key, I think. And then obviously investing in content to drive those digital platforms, which can cost a lot of money, we know. But again, having a great understanding of what you want to do as a brand and as an artist, will then lead to that creating maybe a budget and going, look, I want 5 videos for this EP. Maybe we can't have 5. We have 2 and we do it well. We cut up that content so we can, you know, promote on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, you know, and the likes, to then start seeing where my audience is and where they consume my music. And if you have a deeper understanding of that, then you can understand where you need to create that content for. But it's, I would only invest digitally, you know, like, at this stage, until you get to the point where you have a bit of a fan base where you can think about physical product, for instance.
Yeah, definitely. I think I completely agree. And I think at the moment, from a very much an emerging space, I'm seeing a lot of artists having a lot of success through utilizing their music videos and through creating online content for TikTok and, like, social media and all that sort of thing to build their audience and see where that goes, and then using digital marketing ads and PR and you know, distribution, playlisting and things like that to pull it all together and target your audience into that one space that you want to go, particularly with artists at the moment. We're using strategies where we have digital marketing taking people from those social platforms into the streaming platforms, into those DSPs, so that it's pushing it to then say to those DSPs, hey, we're here and we're building it still, which is, you know, all feeds into one another, which is helpful.
Of course it does. And that's that little, it's tough at the very beginning, you know, because as a lot of people say, it's very difficult to build a platform from 1 to 1,000 and then 1,000 to 10,000 and then 10,000 to 100,000. And then once you have hundreds of thousands of either followers or subs on certain platforms, it becomes a little easier to market to them. But yeah, there's a whole nother beast then to tackle, you know, to get it to that next level and get it to that next level. But it's a constant I think having a deep understanding of where are my 1,000 fans, where are my 100,000 fans, what do they look like, what are we doing to market to them, but being smart. I think having an understanding of what that small business at the beginning looks like, not over investing just because you can, or because you think it's going to work for you, having an idea of what incremental growth is, or true incremental growth.
Yeah, and being able to identify that as well. I think I'm definitely see a lot of artists come to me that go, oh, we're not having growth here, there, and everywhere. And it's like, well, you are. It's just incremental, and it's a growth pattern of 2-5% instead of the 50-60% that you actually want to see.
And everyone would love that. You know, everyone would love 50% growth year on year, and that's exceptional when you think about it. You know, and sometimes it does go like that very, very quickly, but then it also comes down just as quick at times. Yeah. So it's how do you have an understanding of to keep it up there and what you need to do to keep it up there?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think on that, I wanted to sort of touch on a conversation that we had recently in regards to YouTube and the fact that while we're talking about these stores, these DSPs like Spotify and iTunes being something that people really are aspiring to. And I know a lot of artists are like, I just want a Spotify playlist. I just want an Amazon playlist. But realistically, that YouTube is actually the biggest money seller for you guys at the moment.
Well, I mean, I try to explain it this way, is that YouTube is available all over the world. So there's no need for a credit card, and there's no need for a typical model. There's a freemium for all around the world. You have a phone, you can YouTube. So therefore, it's the biggest way to reach the biggest audience. It's one of our most important platforms. And that varies from country to country. So if you look at Australia, yes, there's one platform that's way ahead of everything else. So therefore, the pressure is to make sure that platform works for every single artist and label. Where if I go across the water and I go to Indonesia, for instance, there's a whole different level of platform there that's not that is number one. So I think it's super important to grow a YouTube channel and make sure that you make that work for you. It takes a bit of work, but if you listen to everything YouTube say, they want to be the biggest, you know, music revenue generator for artists and labels in the world. So they're building things like Community Tab and YouTube Shorts and Premiere and a host of other initiatives that artists and labels can use to make sure they can get to a wider audience. That is the biggest audience when you think about it, because everyone's plugged into YouTube. And their YouTube Music subscribers are going through the roof as well, which is good to hear when there's another platform that people are engaging with and wanting to be part of their lives that allows us to market to them. So, super important platform.
Yeah, and I think it's a platform that musicians have potentially shied away from finding a way to build, because it can be a bit of an investment, particularly if your music project feels like it needs a certain level of like video content that goes with that. But I think it's it definitely needs that attention and part of the strategy, which even I'm going to be completely realistic with my clients, we struggle to strategize for YouTube. But I think definitely YouTube Shorts has made it a lot easier to even consider that now, which is good.
Yeah, exactly. And I think they've realized maybe that's where, and I would love to say this, maybe more the mature markets where treating YouTube like some sort of TV show where everything had to be 100% perfect and people only dropping high res videos on there. And now they've brought that back in terms of there's a lot more phone content, you know, especially now with everything opening up and you've got touring and you've got whatnot, you should be using YouTube Shorts as you do Instagram stories. You know, it's no different. You're happy to post photos off your phone, left, right, and center, and video. Why can't you do that with YouTube? You know, so it's great that they've kind of brought it back towards more that anyone can use it in any shape or form.
Yeah. Now we just need an app that's going to post to our Insta Reels, our TikTok, and our YouTube Shorts all at the same time. That'd be great.
True. Very cool.
There's a business idea right there.
True. Maybe we'll get off this podcast and then sort something out.
Well, I want to jump back to Spotify quickly. And I want to sort of touch on some of the news that came out at the start of the year in regards to Spotify starting to penalize artists for having premieres, particularly through radio stations. And we've seen Triple J change their wording around this to first plays now. But how much of an impact do you feel that sort of pressure has had on getting playlist pitching now?
Look, I'll be honest, it really is not something new for me or us. And I'll explain why. I mean, a number of years ago, the publicist of most campaigns was chasing a premiere because that was a big thing that we used to do. And you get a premiere on a successful website or a blog, and that gave you additional looks or an additional audience that you didn't have. And when that happened, I was always very cautious and Orwood would bring it up and say, well, you can't release on a Friday, but premiere on a Tuesday, because you're giving someone 4 days access to the song. And this is most likely going to affect your chances of playlisting because you're giving someone else exclusivity. So we were always matching a premiere, maybe the following day. So if we're premiering on Tuesday, we'd follow on a Wednesday. And we continue to do that for many years. The issue with the Triple J thing was, I think it had a lot to do with feature albums. Mm. So as you could imagine, some high-level artists that we work with, that other labels work with or distributors, when we're discussing campaigns with the Spotify's and Apples, we're discussing them many months ahead. And we might lock in front-page takeovers and whatnot. And then if a Triple J comes in and says, I want to make a feature album, a week before the release, you're in a bit of trouble because you really want that feature album. It's a massive thing, I still think. It's still a check, you know, in terms of goals for usually releases that could probably garner that level of attention. But you cannot release it a week earlier because then it affects your exclusivity, really. And you need to then match it. Moving a release backwards digitally is okay, but if you've got physical and you've got your chart week that you're going to do, it could ruin a lot of plans. So I like how it's turned into, but it's still a bit of a tricky sticking point. It's always nice if you get that feature album of the week after release, because then you kind of, everything's out, nothing's exclusive, and away you go. But we're still going to have moments like that where I think there'll be managers or there'll be artists having to choose, should we take the feature album and maybe really upset the DSPs that are supporting us, or do we let go of the feature album so we don't upset the DSPs? So it's still going to be there for a long time, I think. But I like the first play name. I think that's great. And now with the technology, I mean, we can set up timed releases for 5 minutes after the premiere, for instance, or the first play. So we're all on the same level playing field. That's helped a lot.
Interesting. Yeah, that's I really found the news when that came through a bit eye-opening as to, yeah, how much they are competing, because I don't know why I never clocked in my head this, but that I'd never thought about radio and Spotify competing in regards to those sorts of premieres and things like that. And because I had always consumed music as though, it, you know, after a few days it's come out, that sort of thing. But it does make sense when it comes from that sort of perspective as to why that is. But how do they know that we've even had a premiere is my question.
Well, true. And I think it's way easier for a single or an EP. For instance, if you've got a single and they want to do a first play on Home and Host, or they want to do a first play on Good Nights or whatever it is, then it's much easier. Like I said, the technology now allows us to release virtually at the same time or an hour later, so there's very little exclusivity. And I've questioned that as well. I think everyone's questioned that. How would they know? But it's sometimes when things don't go to plan on that Friday and you realize you're not on every playlist that you expected to be, or there was a great feedback and now there's not, and you're like, well, what happened? Did we do a premiere during the week, or did that, you know, upset someone at DSPs? But I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, like the editorial teams of these, they're music lovers. So if there's a well-known artist that has a single out, I'm pretty sure they're on their socials and they're on Insta or they're in Facebook, and they realize, you know, the Insta says they've got a premiere on Monday on some blog somewhere and you're telling me it's out on Friday. So, you know, I think they'd be aware to an extent. They're not going to be aware of every single thing, but I think the issue that happened around that situation was that DSP was invested in an album and all of a sudden you're giving it to now someone else for a week early. You know, hold on, that doesn't make sense for us. It's fair enough.
Yeah, exactly. Completely fair enough. Well, This has been really insightful. I've loved it. I think my last question for you today is one that I ask everyone, and that is, when you're 90 years old and in a retirement home and wanting to brag to your room neighbor about what you did during your long life, what would you love your keynotes for them to say to them?
Yeah, interesting question.
It is, isn't it?
It is. First and foremost, if I'm 90, I'll probably be bragging that I'm 90. First and foremost.
Yeah. And then I survived the music industry.
Yeah, exactly. I'd love to say, I mean, you know, the experiences that I've had through music and trusting my gut, you know, of going down that music path, picking up the guitar, believing that I could actually do it, believe that I could write, believe that I could play, perform in front of 10 people, perform in 10,000 people, tour various countries, that I gave it a shot, you know, and did it. And then more importantly, that I went into the business side and helped out a huge list of artists that I've worked with that have helped release their records and played that small part. You know, like I still say it's a super important part that we play in terms of marketing and getting an album or a single out for an artist. And, you know, I can say confidently that I'd be really happy the fact that I helped those artists out to get their music out to the world.
Yeah, great. That's so amazing and a really great example as to why I asked that question, because I am really curious what people want, what sort of impact people do want on the music industry and for their own lives as well, because the music industry is definitely a slog and there's no right way to go, and there's always different avenues that you'll find yourself down, and it's thinking about the big picture at the end of it, of like, what do we want to be able to say?
That's a really good question, because, you know, we kind of all go day to day and we do this job, and all of a sudden, you know, 1 year turns into 5 and you're like, what have I achieved, or what am I trying to achieve? But to break it down and make sure you have that mission, you know, and kind of go, well, I am doing this for this. And if I consistently do that, then, you know, I'll be happy at the end of it.
Yeah. And isn't that the goal in life? I'll be happy at the end of it.
Yeah, well, he's hoping. Yeah. And yeah. If I'm 90, I swear I'll be happy. I'll be smiling. I'll tell you that.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic. Well, thank you so much for your time today. I think this, scratch level of the music industry and on the distribution side has been really helpful, and I think will help a lot of musicians and some music industry professionals, I think, as well, to see your perspective of where distribution is going and what we can expect, particularly around making those YouTube strategies as well. So thank you so much for your time.
No problems. I really appreciate it. It was good to chat.
I
love nothing more than chatting music.
So, yep. That's good. We get along well.
Yeah, exactly. I'm on a roll.